Welcome to the July 27, 2011 Landmarks Preservation Commission meeting. First item on the agenda is roll call. Those present, Chair McIntyre, Vice Chair Maddox, Commissioners Eckley, Jensen, Luce, Pham, ex officio McClintock. Second item on the agenda is consent agenda, excusal of absences. Both Commissioners Sundell and York have called in. I move approval of excusal of absences. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next item on the agenda is meeting minutes. We have them from June 8th and June 22nd. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, they are approved as presented. Item 3, old business. Item 3A, 1111 North 4th Street on siding. Amelia Anest, homeowner. She is not here.
She said that she may be late.
Okay.
And Michael Case is going to represent the project.
All right.
The commission could consider waiting.
I can wait. I can move the agenda around. Two of us here, Commissioners Eckley and I, were there at the ARC meeting on the 22nd. So if we finish the business that's presented before us and the applicant's still not here, we can still dispatch the agenda as we will speak for the presentation. With that, we will defer item 3A and go on to new business, item 3B. 608 North Sheridan, North Slope, and in that instance, there is no representative. So, it is your pleasure. We have dealt with this sort of instance before, so I will go ahead and proceed with the business. May we begin with the staff report.
Okay.
Can I first just...
Okay.
I'll just first say that this was just an unplanned circumstance. There's an emergency that came up with the representative of the property. They offered to push it to another agenda. We did say, however, that if the commission doesn't have any questions, if this is a fairly straightforward application, then the commission can still act. So we kept it on the agenda, but the commission can always defer if they want the applicant present as well. So Tony will go ahead and read the staff report, and then... you can discuss.
So, North Sheridan Avenue. Built in 1905, the house at 608 North Sheridan is a contributing structure in the North Slope Historic Special Review District. The current proposal includes removal of part of the non-historic siding, which is the section of existing non-historic vertical board and batten-type siding. The upper and lower horizontal siding will be retained. The section of the siding that is removed will be replaced with tight knot cedar lap siding matching the horizontal wood siding. We'll have a photo in just a moment. The applicant is unsure what is under the non-historic siding. The proposal includes the removal of only the non-historic vertical board and batten type siding. Standards to be considered are the North Slope Historic District Design Guidelines, number 6, exterior materials. Use compatible materials that respect the visual appearance of the surrounding buildings. Subsequently, a few compatible brick or stucco-covered structures were constructed, although many later uses of these two materials do not fit the character of the neighborhood. Additions to existing buildings should be sided with the material to match or be compatible with the original or existing material. New structures should utilize exterior materials similar to those typically found in the neighborhood. Also consideration of, we ask for consideration of Secretary of Interior standard for rehabilitation. Number 2, the historic character of a property will be retained and preserved. The removal of distinctive materials or alteration of features, spaces, and spatial relationships that characterize a property will be avoided. Staff analysis, item 1, this house is historically significant as a contributing structure in the North Slope Historic District. It is a bungalow built in 1905. As part of the North Slope, it is listed on the Tacoma, Washington, and National Registers of Historic Places. Item 2, Landmarks Preservation Commission has jurisdiction to review and approve or not approve changes to this building per TMC 1307095 prior to those changes being made by virtue of its status as a city landmark. And item 3, the original exterior siding on the house was either removed or covered with the existing non-original horizontal cedar lap and vertical siding, which has been on the house since at least prior to designation of the North Slope Historic District per property descriptions at that time. The applicant is uncertain about the condition of any remaining original siding. Item 4, the removal of the non-historic vertical siding material, application of a moisture barrier material, and replacement with cedar lap material that matches the remaining horizontal wood siding appears to meet North Slope Historic District Special Review District Guideline 6 for exterior materials. And I'm going to not read that into the record, which I already have. Item 5, the house has been altered previously with the addition of non-historic siding. The current proposal to remove and replace in-kind historic material and to retain original material does not change the form of the structure and does not appear to further alter the historic character, which appears to meet Secretary of Interior standards. Number 2, 4, and I've already read that into the record. Recommendation, staff recommends adopting the above analysis of findings and approval of the proposal to the commission. Thank you.
As we don't have an applicant here, I will open up to commissioners' questions and comments, any sort of discussion.
I'd just like to say that I think the staff's report is very, very adequate, and I commend the property owners for doing the work that they're doing on this house and returning it to its to the look of the neighborhood. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from commissioners? If there are no other comments, I would entertain a motion for approval. You wanted to speak.
I move that the Tacoma Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the application for 608 North Sheridan for the replacement of the siding.
Is there a second?
A second.
We have a motion on the floor to approve the application and a second. Is there a discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we will proceed to vote. All those in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion passes. Next item on the agenda is chair comments. I will reserve comments until further in the meeting. And with that, we are on to item 5, board briefing. Pagoda at Point Defiance Park. Roger Stanton with DCRA, and is it Melissa McGinnis?
That's me.
With the Metro Parks.
Great. Do you have pictures?
Sure. Go ahead and join us up at the other end of the table or wherever you find yourself to be comfortable. And did you want to do the staff report, or do you think they
sure.
could launch right in as soon as we get up?
I'll just while Tony's putting their drive-in and getting
okay.
the presentation up, I'll just say a couple of things. As I think most of or all of the commission's aware, the pagoda at Point Defiance Park was extensively damaged by an arsonist earlier this year. There is emergency repair work that is underway, and this is being managed by Metro Parks and being done consistently with historic preservation standards. This site, surprisingly enough, is not a city landmark, but it is a very historically significant building for the city, both for its association with the history of the streetcar, it was the second station in the park, and for its association with the overall development of the North End, the history of Point Defiance, and of course, its architecture. And so this, as I understand it, this is a briefing to provide an overview and update on the restoration activities, what's going on at the site, kind of touch bases with the commission on where that process is and so forth. So I guess we have Roger Stanton and Melissa McGinnis from Metro Parks.
Roger.
Hi, Roger.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having us here this evening. We did want, Metro Parks definitely wanted to make sure Landmarks Commission knew what was going on and get your input and feedback. If there's anything that we're not catching as we go along, it's as Ruben already mentioned, it was an arson fire. We had planned on doing some upgrades thanks to the bond issue that Citizen Passion 05, but we didn't quite expect to do this extensive of bond issue repairs to it. So fortunately, the building was insured, and so that helps a lot. So basically, what I was going to do is just, Ruben gave a little bit of background. I just have a little little background history on the pagoda for those of you who may not be familiar with its story. And then Roger, who's with BCRA, is the firm that's working with us to prepare the plans to restore the building and get it up to code. So, as Ruben mentioned, the pagoda was the second streetcar station at Point Defiance Park, and this was the first one. So, I didn't want you to think you're mistaken. Going, I don't remember that. this was the first streetcar station, and within just a year or so of Point Defiance Park opening by 1890, it was so popular to get out there by streetcar that folks. They had to put a second streetcar on the line. So it was just an amazingly popular venue for citizens of Tacoma to get out there. And I'm going to presume that gets me to the next one. And, of course, this is the building. This is the pagoda as it was, as it looked when it was completed in 1914. It was designed by a Tacoma architect by the name of Luther Twitchell. And very, very controversial at the time for two reasons. One being its oriental style, and the other being its price. It was considered way over budget, ended up costing a little over $30,000. One of the things that the Park Board commissioners justified at the time is they wanted it to last for the fourth generation. And so they were concerned that whatever they build, they spend the money and do it right. Coincidentally, I recently realized that at the same time they built this, the brick restroom in Wright Park was also constructed under the same fundraising element. So the brick restroom that you've got there, there are some definite similar elements to it. The other thing about the building being controversial was the oriental style, and that actually came from direction from the original master plan for Point Defiance Park done by Hare and Hare in 1911. And their recommendation in that plan was that any future architecture going into the park should have an Asian style to it. Simply because to let the environment, let nature speak for itself and keep the buildings low-lying, low roofs, and blend in rather than stand out and be prominent structures in themselves. For those of you who do know Japanese architecture, you also know that this is not a pagoda, especially if you look at the one down on Ruston Way, that they don't look alike. This became known in the common vernacular of Tacoma as the pagoda even before it was built. They basically, the board was calling it an oriental pavilion, and then the newspapers called it the pagoda design. And once it got in the newspapers, the pagoda, it has been forever and a day, the pagoda. And so this was the side of the building where the streetcar came around. It's called Trolley Lane, so the streetcar came up this way and dropped passengers off. So in some regards, this is actually the back door of the pagoda, which we think of as what you see so much today, because this is where you'd come into the park and you'd go through the pagoda to exit this side, which takes you down out to the park itself. The pathway in front of us ran over to the boathouse, which was the predominant draw of Point Defiance Park in the early part of the century. So obviously, for those of you who've been out to the park in recent times, you know it pretty much looks the same. It hasn't changed a whole lot over the years. Its use has, but the basic appearance of the building is filled in. Whoops. Don't do that. No. Go here. Okay, what am I doing wrong?
Hit escape. Oops.
Escape?
Escape on the keyboard, maybe.
There we go. We do have two photographs of the interior of the building as it looked originally. These, I'm going to guess, are staged photographs right after the building was completed. The people are, when you start looking at them closely, they're in both photographs, and some of them are just obviously quite posed. And the other reason that gives it away is the light fixtures were not installed in the building when it first opened in April. They weren't installed until December. So this is definitely sometime between April and December 1914. And so rocking chairs around. This end of the pagoda that you see right here where the fireplace is located is essentially in great shape inside the building. You'll be real pleased to know that. The other end of the building, which is where the originally was the concession stand, This is where the bulk of the damage took place. And this is where the catering kitchen had been installed. There was a wall where the heating element came up, and that's where the damage took place. So there's the original look of the inside, which BCRA is looking carefully at all these pictures. One of the things we did find, can sort of say there's water fountains inside. We didn't find any water fountains, but the original heat for the pagoda was radiators, and we actually found one of the old radiators down in the basement that we didn't even know existed. So trying to figure out maybe a way to reuse that upstairs in some sort of element, too.
What was the lower level used for?
That's actually kind of funny. It was a...
Is that later in your...
It doesn't really... there's no pictures. Just like today, it's a big chunk of it is restroom. Because when you're in the pagoda... it shows in this picture. The staircase on either side goes down to the men's restroom and the ladies' restroom. There was also a smoking lounge there for gentlemen. There was a room where women could go down and rest if being in the park had been way too stressful for the day. And the other one that my favorite part of it is that there was going to be a woman's restroom attendant, and I love it, to lie upon. There are going to be easy chairs and couches for the women to lie upon if they are tired with a tramp through the long acres of the park. So I thought that was very nice. But this is my favorite part about what the original plan was. There was also to be a first aid hospital room and a medical chest with all the tinctures, pills, and bandages necessary. There will be a hospital room on the first floor, but no attendants will be employed, as generally in crowds when accident happens, doctors are always near at hand. They had just never heard of being sued, ever, when they thought about it. So there was going to be an operating table and a small set of surgical instruments. So it was just in case there was a problem. I have no evidence any one way or the other that was actually built or installed in the building. So downstairs, predominantly, there were restrooms not only from inside the pagoda, but also there were some exterior doors for some large men's and women's restrooms on either end of the building. And then planned for this. In more recent times, it still had the restroom facilities, but it was pretty much storage is all that it was used for down there. As lovely as we all think the pagoda looks on the outside, there were some, as BCRA has discovered, some very interesting building techniques undertaken that make moisture down there a real issue that we're trying to deal with right now. So we've got the inside of the building, and then this is just one of my favorite pictures just of the crowds at Point Defiance. You can see, again, the streetcar coming around. The pond where the Japanese gardens are obviously goes way back to the streetcar era. I think that's kind of the end of our historical pictures. Basically, the pagoda itself was used as a streetcar station until the streetcars ended coming out to Point Defiance Park in 1938. And at that point, it became the bus station. And so the buses continued to use it as the bus drop-off point. And in 1962, the bus service stopped going out to Point Defiance Park and going up to the pagoda as well. There was real question as to what was going to happen to the pagoda at that point. The records are a little bit shaky, but then the United Federation of Garden Clubs approached the park district and said, how about if we take over the building? And so they went in and they used it for flower shows, garden shows. It started becoming a real community gathering place, not just a transient spot waiting for the bus or the streetcar, but it became the place to come for shows. And they actually built at that time a small little office area down in the basement area for their records and so forth. And that's how it was used until 1980. And at that point, so much interest was coming from the community to use the building, not just let the garden shows do their flower shows, but other people were wanting to use it for gathering, that the park district decided that they would continue to let the flower and garden show rent it, but they would now start opening it for what it's really well known for now is the weddings. Lots and lots of weddings, lots of memorial services, receptions, parties, retirement services, you name it. They're all take place at the pagoda. I did it again. Okay. This wasn't what I was expecting, but that's okay. Yes, and then we come up to parties, weddings, and then a really bad phone call on my phone early on the morning of April 15th, and that's the pagoda's on fire. And Tacoma Fire Department did a great job, and I really have to admire them because they were trying to put the fire out without destroying the roof. for the longest time, for the first couple of hours, they were trying to just cut little holes and let the fire, you know, try to get down and control the fire, get the wood underneath under control, and they couldn't do it, and they actually came over to us and apologized and said, we're going to have to start taking the tiles off, because they simply could not get the fire under control. There's amazing, huge timber structures under those tiles, holding out those big outriggers and then the dormers on either end, and they just could not get, they were... This particular hole here, they cut here to try to run a hose up inside, run it from the inside, and they just couldn't get it under control. They actually had to end up pulling the whole dormer off the end of the building to try and get the fire under control. But, like I say, the good news is the fact that the fire really was contained to this end of the building. And just more fireworks. One of the things you can see there with the roof, the main support across the roof, did it burn right through it. So there's going to be significant roof repairs needed to the building, and Roger will talk more about those. This is where the fire started. It was down in the basement. It was an arson fire, as Ruben mentioned. And what happened was the fire actually traveled up through the ductwork. The furnace unit was down below. The fire got in the furnace unit, and that interior wall that had been put in the 80s for the catering kitchen, it just went and shot right up that internal wall, and that's why it hit the roof right where it did. So it was this part they got out pretty quick. This was a pretty straightforward fire. And as all of our planning department has told us, modern standards would not let this happen. Yes, so Ruben's over here shaking his head. Yes, that would not have happened if there had been a stopper for fire in that unit. So the new one will. Again, this is that wall that was installed. And partly this, besides the catering kitchen, this was also the location of the accessible restroom for the pergola, because there is no elevator or anything to get between down to the restrooms. The originally only restrooms you had to go down the marble steps to get to them. And so the fire took that wall out completely. This is right after the fire. And I don't know how many of you have been involved with a fire before, but it was a huge learning lesson. You know, always hear on the news, it's like, well, the fire was under control, but that's smoke and water damage. Well, we were lucky. The pagoda is pretty tough for water damage. The smoke damage as a whole, I had no concept of what smoke does to permeate into all of the materials. The Park District does have a... emergency plan. We had already called Belfour, which is a company that comes in after disasters. They were actually standing there on site waiting for the fire department to release the building. I mean, they were there as quick as they could. First thing they did was get in here and get the water off the floor, get as much of that abrasive materials off the building as they possibly could. And just foam and puddles, and it was a mess. But just within an amazingly short period of time, they had come in and cleaned every surface. They cleaned anything, especially the marble that was porous. They didn't want to get the smoke out of that as quick as possible. And then they've also come in. The thing that's always, I don't know, I just felt really stupid. I go, oh, is the floor okay? And they go, it's ceramic tiles, big, thick clay. You know, they've been heated at much higher temperatures than they ever saw here. And then our maintenance crew had just closed the pagoda the week before to re-wax the floors. And they said that actually probably helped them, because they had a nice brand new coat of wax on them to help, you know, as the smoke and the water and everything went over it. So, but what we have done since that time is that to protect the floors while all the other work is going on, is they've come and covered all the floors and all the stairways with a sheet of plywood, or many, many sheets of plywood. And there they've taken out all the melted everything. And the overhead trusses, I don't want to steal any of your story here, Roger, but the overhead trusses were really lucky. That one in the back is damaged beyond repair. It's going to have to be replaced, but it's just amazing how much we're going to be able to save. I'm starting again. I will stop doing that. And basically what they're doing right now is trying to get the building watertight. Obviously, the big gaping holes in the roof is not a good thing. And so all the tiles have been removed. You can see the workers here are piling them down below. And so we're going to be able to reuse as many of the original tiles as possible. They're coming off. I actually talked to the workers that are doing it. They said they're coming off real easy. They were removed in 1988 during the last repair and restoration to the building. And this is kind of a little serendipitous. The architect that worked on that project was Gene Grulich. I'm sure you've had Gene come before you. So I was talking to Gene about the tiles, and he said, well, you know, the kind of odd good-bad thing is when he had to replace a number of broken tiles in 88, He had a hard time matching the old and the new, so he put all the new ones together over where the kitchen was, where the fire was. So the majority of the tiles that were destroyed were actually the tiles that came off. And it's a fuzzy picture, but I just laughed so hard when I saw this one. They're actually saran wrapping them downstairs in the basement, so that until they get, they're able to replace them back on the roof. So trying to get ready for the repairs. Tremendous amount of code issues have come up in the building, as you can well imagine. And so that's what we've brought Roger along to talk about. Unless you have any questions about the background history or anything, I'll be happy to answer those.
Question? Did you have a question?
No, we were just,
oh, okay.
One of our applicants has just walked in,
oh,
so
okay.
We were trying to get them seated.
Okay.
So,
as you can imagine, heat does some crazy things to a building. Obviously, with the fire on the inside of this building, it heated up this space, and by heating the space, it makes everything porous, and it puts pressure in this space, which drives smoke into all the porous surfaces, which is what happened to all of the wood in this building. So here you can see, you can see this is the floor plan minutes before, and you can see all the window that's in here, all of that's wood window, single pane wood window, and all of the wood in that single pane wood window has severe smoke intrusion in it, so which has to be remediated. So we're running into some things. We're doing them in such a way that we're doing it to the Secretary of Interior's standard.
Right.
That's how we are approaching this. Since we're being as conscious as possible as we restore this thing back to the way it was. In restoring it, like Melissa was saying, we have some code issues that we have to address. So now that the roof is off, do we come in and seismically upgrade this building because it was severely under seismically designed? And so we're looking at some strategies on how do you do that. What does that look like so you don't have to tear into all of these brick walls? The walls are just brick, unreinforced concrete brick. That's all they are. So it's this heavy tile roof sitting on this plinth of brick and concrete that has big gaping window holes in it.
And the good thing I did forget to mention is the firemen did not break a single window.
Yeah.
I give them all kinds of credit. Throughout this whole fire thing, they were so conscious that they about the historic nature of the building that they did have to break a couple doors to get in, the glass panes on the doors to get in. But the windows, nothing was damaged.
The fire didn't break any of the windows either.
Mm-hmm. Fire didn't break any of the windows.
Fire.
Just amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and it's probably because, you know, the same reason if you ever go to the pagoda, you freeze to death in the wintertime, or, you know, it's just because everything's going up, you know, so it left our windows alone down here, the temperatures, but, yeah.
You can change temperature equilibrium once immediately.
So some of the questions that I know I've gotten from friends and relatives is, why do we have to take all of the tile off and all the roof off if the fire is just on one side? And the reason why is Wilson, our structural engineer, came out. And you can see in here the gap between these boards. And when you heat these boards that are 100 years old, it makes them shrink. And so they all shrunk. And so you can't use boards that have shrunk, obviously, because there's big gaping holes in them. So unfortunately, all of the 3x wood up here had to be removed. As Melissa was saying, this is the truss that took on the worst damage. And I believe, I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure we're only replacing the top cord of this truss, not the entire truss. So it will be rebuilt so that it looks like it was the original, obviously. Here's another picture on the other end of the pagoda, the fireplace, and you can see the bubbling of this wood. And you can see, and this picture's probably not the best, but you can see where it also, because of the heat, shrunk. So all of this wood shrunk, and when you don't have the correct tongue and groove connection, you run into some structural problems. This is the only roof diaphragm the building has, so it actually holds this roof together in lateral movement. So if you don't have the correct connection on these, you end up with some troubles. A couple things we are upgrading on the building because of this. We've heard a lot of complaints as we have talked with people from the city. Not the city, but in the city of Tacoma, that this building was very cold in the winter. So a strategy we are using is hydronic floor heating. So we're going to run hydronic tubes underneath this slab, which is incredibly deep. The ceramic tiles themselves are an inch plus thick. They're not the normal tiles we have now. And then you have a mortar bed, and then you have, I think, 7.5 inches of concrete. Well, to heat 7.5 inches such that it's heating your building takes a week to heat up, and it takes a week to slow down. So if you want to, you know, set the thermostat to 74 for an event, it's going to take a week to get there. So in addition to the hydronic flooring, we're adding back HVAC system, a similar one that was there. It'll obviously be much more efficient. I think the one that was there, Jesse was saying, was like the efficiency of 70-something, and this one will be a 95 or something like that. So it's much, much better. We are also adding fire detection and security, which the building didn't have, and it'll be connected to a Sonatrol, which will obviously have alerts, so people will find out quicker if there's any sort of smoke that comes in between the systems. Electrical upgrades. You saw early in these photos the exterior image of this building has the old sconces, and those were taken off a while back, and it was my understanding that we couldn't put them back on because the wires and or connection to the building. So all of that's being restored. We were able to fish new wires through the existing conduit lines, so we don't have to tear apart the wall there. We're doing it was old knob and tube wiring, which in itself everyone knows is not safe. So they're ripping all that out, putting new wiring into today's standard. Accessibility upgrades. The restroom on the upper floor was not accessible, and we're pushing this wall out just a hair so that we can fit an accessible restroom, proper clearances for doors, and obvious egress paths that work to today's standard, which will be a nice upgrade. I mentioned seismic upgrades. We're still studying how we're going to accomplish this. And Ruben, I think you were in on the early conversations on how do we do this without tearing apart this building. And we have some solutions right now that we're close to making everything work without having to touch any of the brick at all.
Question in that regard. I would agree that it's a good idea. Is it actually being driven by the city that it be done?
It's being driven by once the remediation becomes half as much as the valuation of the building, you get kicked into having to bring things up to today's code standard.
Are they actually kicking into that because these are fire repairs?
I believe
they,
so.
They
yeah.
still
we have a full code
under that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's how they're treating. So it is being acquired by the city.
Yes.
Would having it listed as a landmark change that?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't have necessarily interpreted like the replacement of the roof decking as anything other than fire damage, removal and replacement of that, and that would not have, I guess, my opinion on it would have been that that's not... that's not substantial alteration in the eyes of the code as far as code defines alteration. It's just replacement of damaged goods. And so that, the cost for that I would argue would not have been included in that to get you to that threshold. The other things that you're doing may have gotten you there anyway, but I was just curious as to whether or not you were actually triggered under that threshold or not.
Yeah, early in that original meeting we talked about valuations
it's a good idea to do it, but if you're not required to do it, then it's always a tough
I think it came down to also for the Park District public safety.
Yeah.
You know that we are encouraging 200 people to be in there,
yeah.
and knowing that it doesn't meet any modern standards. And then it became what level of seismic upgrades do you want to get to? The other conversation we had was like, we can hold it together long enough to get you out, but we might not hold it together when the big earthquake's over. It's still standing and salvageable. And I just partly laugh because it's sitting right on the bluff. I go, it's a big enough earthquake. Take that building down. There's not going to be a bluff either. But yeah, it did come into a lot of discussions on valuation and how far the code was going to push us on this one. The fire department did agree that because of its historic nature, that we don't have to do the sprinkler system upstairs.
Yeah, and I mean that's pretty much it. If you have more questions, I can answer your questions on what else needs to be done. I think we've pretty much covered everything that needs to be done to the building to remediate the fire damage downstairs. Obviously, there was some damage to storage units, little shelving units, and other things, and obviously the furnace and the boiler and.
And the restrooms were all taken out, and they were not the original restrooms. They were remodeled completely in '88, and so they were everything again. It's just is that smoke? I had no idea what smoke did until this particular one. So they'll be doing downstairs. The bathrooms will all be redone and brought up to modern ADA standards as well. And that's some of the challenges we're really having with this building, even just transitions from doorways and levels of ground outside and inside. It's going to be quite a challenge.
Questions?
The seismic upgrades, will they be visible from the inside? Is it invisible?
The only place where you would notice a difference is if you're standing inside this warming kitchen. This wall does not have enough shear value to hold the end of the building together. And
Are you shotcreting it?
The only option is to shotcrete this
right.
wall, to add the structure around these windows here. I believe we have a photo of that. Yeah, you're exactly right, to shotcrete. A nice touch is we have a ceiling that goes in over the kitchen. Because it's a kitchen, you need a hard lid surface, right, you can wash. Above the ceiling will be as it was. And so it's just below the ceiling around these windows, which is mostly going to be covered by cabinetry anyway. So just around these windows here will there be added shotcrete that ties down to the stem walls below.
Couldn't the roofing and the lumber be salvaged?
We are absolutely studying best opportunities to salvage. So whether it's we rip down, we take all the burnt stuff off so we can use it for trim downstairs or upstairs. We can trim out the hole downstairs with the existing 3x if we mill them correctly, put a nice dark stain so that they look like these trusses up here. We're definitely, there's also some copper that came off from the roof, and we're trying to figure out how do we wrap this copper into the new design so it looks as if it was done at the same time.
In the supplemental HVAC system, I assume it's on the upstairs. Is that all going to be exposed? Or?
No. No, what's going to happen is, I'll show you this floor plan. We're studying right now putting a duct that comes up in this corner from down below. The mechanical, underneath all of this covered walkway downstairs is mechanical space. So we're going to run a duct through, we're going to punch through the wall down below, the stem wall, run up right here, and then blow air across the building with forced air. We'll have the temperature probably about 60 with the hydronic heat. That's about where it will stay, is 60 all the time. And then we'll supplement that with forced air over the top of that. And then the air returns will be over here, which is where they were before.
Since you've got a radiator and you've got hot water, it sounds like, I mean, hydronic is hot mm-hmm. water running through. Could you run hot water through the radiator? I'm not saying supplement. Replacing the forced air, but just
a radiator's back.
Well, you've got a radiator.
No,
and you got
hydronic
a
floor. You got really deep set tiles and deep thick set. You could take the tiles up and run the hydronic floor underneath the tiles.
You could, but in doing so, you would mess with your threshold of floor level. Your floor height would change because you'd have to add the hydronic system in there.
You'd just put a thinner. Set
down?
Yeah, or you put like a metal tent to protect the hydronic lines, and then put a thicker, you know, just put the grout right over the top of that.
I think our strategy is how can we be the least amount intrusive
right.
to this building?
Yeah.
And pulling all those tiles off, you're not going to get them all off without breaking some of them.
Right, exactly.
And then we have to replace them, which...
Well, the
the air is not it's a heating element, but it's also ventilation. I'm sure it's a ventilation requirement.
Right.
So you're still going to have to have those
still
fans
have to have
where you're not pushing hot air or cold air or
yeah, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
You still need that air moving through there.
I wasn't arguing you don't put the air in. Water, you got radiators and two things kind of work.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Should you want to put sprinklers in, you actually could, because if you're replacing the decking on the roof, you could run the sprinkler lines over the top of the decking, under the insulation, and under the
we don't have
under the tile.
We don't have room. It would change the profile of the roof system. Right now, that tile sits on the decking, and so we don't have room.
So you don't have any sort of.
You guys are not putting any insulation.
There's no
insulation.
On the upper floor, and to do so. Would change how everything's detailed out when it gets to the eaves.
Yeah.
It would look a lot different.
Just to suggest.
We certainly wanted to make this building warmer. We tried it.
They really did. Then they've been explaining to me yesterday, Roger was explaining that I wish Luther Fischel was here so he could explain to us what he was thinking. But how these outriggers that support that big party, Roger's like, this just doesn't meet anybody's standard of doing anything today, so it's just been an incredible challenge.
Yeah. I don't think any architect should be required to come back 100 years later.
Explain with me. If it's standing 100 years later, you did fine.
Yeah, we haven't torn it down yet. And I did want to just also, when they were doing the work in 88, when I was talking to Gene Grulick, he said, I just want to let you know that the plans from the Park District in 88, so far, how far we've come, they actually were going to rip off and throw all the tiles away and just put a tab roof up there because it was cheaper.
Oh, no.
We all can thank Gene for fighting that good fight. Saying no, because kind of like even during the fire, a lot of people were going, well, you can't replace those tiles. You'll never find them again. And it's like, tiles. I mean, people make tiles today quite easily.
Yeah.
There's reproduction, everything. And so that was kind of the thought, was that they just put the tab roof up there. Gene fought hard in 88, so we owe Gene a little debt of gratitude, too, for saving this awkward roof that doesn't allow these guys to do anything that makes sense, like putting insulation or...
I'm sorry for the suggestion. It was just thrown out there.
No, that's fine. You wouldn't believe how many things we've gone round and round.
No, I've worked on a project fairly similar to this, and we actually were required to put in sprinklers, and that's how we did it. We were able to hide it under the tile.
Oh, yeah.
In insulation. So.
Yeah.
But
we certainly looked under.
Dry heads.
Right.
The hydronic system, to speak back to the hydronic system, it's designed such that you put the system underneath the floor, and then you add a layer of shotcrete, which is the thermal resistance to push it back up. And then we have insulation underneath that. So we'll have 3.5 inches of sprayed-on insulation underneath the shotcrete, which is 3.5 inches underneath the hydronic system, which sits directly in contact with the floor above. So
that's a lot of concrete to heat up, though. Boy,
it is.
Yeah.
It is, and that's why we're
warm.
Going with
Once
the
it's warm.
System.
Yeah, take a month to warm it up, and
that's
then
right.
Take a month to cool it off.
That was kind
too.
Of the plan with
oh, yeah,
it.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
they're just basically saying. It's
yeah.
such an efficient system that you just
yeah.
turn it
right,
on.
Right, right.
Yeah, that, well, that's
because once it heats, it's gonna.
Yeah,
and,
once you hit the initial threshold, it becomes really, really efficient.
And really, it's gonna solve a lot of complaints for the pagoda because. As people touch the floor with these wetting shoes, that's the part that makes them cold, is the touch
yeah.
of the cold.
Yeah.
You know, the temperature can be 75, but if the floor is cold, you feel cold. So that's going to be wonderful.
Yeah,
as
floors are 60 degrees are going to be, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be really nice.
Are there any other questions or comments for our presenters? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Keep informed, and hopefully... We'll be starting on that roof soon, so that it's not leaking. You can have meetings in there now and hold an umbrella. It's great.
Sure.
I've always wanted to.
Do you have, a completion that you're targeting?
What do you think, Roger, for...
We're going to try and go in for the permit for the roof on Monday. So we're trying to get all the documents together so we can at least get it dried in.
Right.
And then there's so many hands in the pot for the rest of the development, and if we're going to do any program enhancements, that it's really hard to say because we don't know when the design's going to be finished. We're thinking probably early next year, spring next year, we'd like to have everything complete for sure.
That's our goal.
Are you guys putting plywood over that deck? Or no?
I don't think so. That's a good question.
you'll struggle to get to code if you don't. But
it's a good question. I know Wilson has all the documents ready for submittal.
No, I know Wilson. I'm sure he's doing the funny things.
Yeah. So
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
It'd be half inch. It wouldn't really affect your detail.
I think in the 88 documents, there's a layer of half inch on top of that.
Could be.
And so I'm sure he'd be putting it back just like that. You have to get the lateral restraints on top. So yeah.
Yep.
Most likely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Circling back to item 3A, 1111 North 4th Street. Mike Case, thank you for joining us. We'll begin with
5:30.
That's fine. We just skipped over it in the rest of our agenda, and we're back now, and we will begin with a staff report.
So, for commissioners not familiar with 1111 4th Street, this house was built around 1890. It's considered a contributing structure in the North Slope Historic District, and it has quite a history prior to the current owner's experience with it. So I'm going to provide just a real brief summary and then bring us up to date. This house is currently in enforcement status due to non-permitted work begun by a previous owner back in August of 2005. This work included replacement, or actually addition, of siding, windows, and a deck on the front of the house, in addition to an extensive interior remodel. A full description of all of this was included in the September 22nd staff report from last year, which is actually, I think, on the back of the staff report here. In addition to the lack of Landmarks Commission approval at the time and lack of building permits, it has come to light that very little of the work that was completed by this previous owner meets the applicable codes, including structural, electrical, plumbing, and extensive replacement of the building's interior, and substantial work on the exterior has been, is, was required, and is going underway right now. On September 22nd, this commission approved the current owner's proposal to bring the property into code compliance. They presented a plan including the removal and replacement of windows, which were part of the violation that the Landmarks Commission recorded back in 2005. And removal of one of the two chimneys, and granted relief from the requirement that the owner remove and replace the siding. But on April 27th, 2011, the main chimney was approved for removal due to its extensively deteriorated condition and the cost of repair following a site visit by the Architectural Review Committee. And I think several commissioners did make that site visit and saw that chimney and firebox at that time. So it has been removed. Most recently, the Architectural Review Committee visited the site on July 20th to assess the condition of existing siding, which included the non-historic siding installed by the previous owner. And this is a tongue and groove drop siding that's been applied to whatever was existing on the house on the outside of it. And I believe that installation required the previous owner also to remove some shingle siding that had been on the building in some spots. There's been a lot of siding activity on this building, suffice it to say. And consider a proposal to remove this existing siding that was installed in 2005 and replace it with a smooth texture hardy plank in a horizontal lap configuration. The standards that would apply to this application include the North Slope Historic Special Review District Design Guidelines for Exterior Materials. I won't read those all out. The Secretary of the Interior Standards, Standards 2 and 9. And of course, I think that it's not included in the staff report also, but there is a preface in the Secretary of the Interior Standard which indicates that the use of the standard shall be applied with economic and technical feasibility in mind. And the North Slope Historic Design Guidelines also have a similar note about documented cases of economic hardship. The Architectural Review Committee consisted at this meeting on July 20th of Mark McIntyre, Duke York, Ed Eckley, and Ruben, me, and Tony. The comments at the meeting included the following. I'll read these in. To better understand the condition of at least three layers of existing siding, which is a mix of original in 1890 and potentially 1930s installation of horizontal lap siding with mitered corners in the 1990s outer layer of horizontal siding and shingles. So, the first, item number one, the existing, which is the outermost layer of siding, including drop, rabbited wood siding on the first story and cedar shingles on the second story was incorrectly installed. Trim pieces, including window headers and the belly band, are not flashed and present a potential long-term problem with water incursion. In many instances, there is no paper or moisture barrier. In the location of the chimney, the belly band and other horizontal elements do not line up from one side of the chimney location to the other. Item 2, the outermost first-story siding appears to have been aggressively disc-sanded on all exterior walls of the building, possibly to address swelling of the wood from rain exposure. It is likely the house was not painted for a significant amount of time following the siding installation. Thus, the siding shows physical marks of sanding and is of varying thickness throughout the house. Item 3, the original siding, a drop-tongue and groove siding, remains as sheathing in some places on the house, but is likely missing and or, quote, chopped up in other places. The siding that does remain is directly nailed to the studs, which would be typical for this time period. In other areas, holes have been patched with OSB or solid wood boards, and window openings have been moved over the years. Item 4, on a portion of the rear elevation, there is existing horizontal bevel siding. It is unknown when the siding was installed. Pictures from 1996 and 1977 indicate that the house had bevel siding on the first story and shingle siding on the second story at that time, and the owners provided a newspaper photo at the ARC meeting from the 40s that suggested that part, if not all, of the house had been bevel siding throughout at that time. Item 5, the installation of new wood windows, which was previously agreed to by the owners, will require extensive siding work, flashing and trim around the window openings. In a lot of cases, I think the existing window trim, the way it was installed and how it was done, is probably not salvageable. Item 6, due to the amount of work involved in window replacement and the substandard/faulty installation of the existing siding, the owner wishes to replace the siding as a component of the current project. Item 7, there's very little original intact siding left anywhere on the building, and at present, 3 types of siding are available or visible. The Architectural Review Committee recommended the removal of the siding materials and installing 8.5 horizontal, smooth texture hardy plank that is overlapped at 1.25 inch to match the 7-inch reveal on the siding on the rear elevation. The recommendation included the installation of hemlock or cedar corner boards or caps, either miter caps or corner boards, recommended against a rough finish whiteboard, and also recommended a retention of the siding on the north elevation dormer, which is a curved dormer on the upper portion of the second story that has a nice rounded wall, exterior wall, which is pretty difficult to replace. The Architectural Review Committee also recommended that the Commission, as it makes this decision, consider this in the context of a potential special tax valuation project. This house is listed as a contributing structure. The Commission should be considerate of what's approved here and what goes forward, because I believe the intent is, if at all possible, to recoup some of this expenditure with a special tax valuation application at the conclusion of the project. And that concludes my staff report.
Is there anything you'd like to add? If not, we can, 2 of us can speak for you if you would like. There were actually all 3 of us that were met with you last Wednesday are here, so.
Yeah, feel free to speak. IP pretty much covered everything.
Okay, if you have anything to add, please do.
Okay, fine. Thank you for anything while you're speaking, though.
Okay, you may get some questions from commissioners.
Okay.
All right, with that, I will open up discussion and questions from the commission. Do you have any questions for the art committee? Ex officio McClintock, do you have any questions?
Well, I'll make a comment. We obviously don't prefer to have the hardy plank utilized, but given the circumstances in this case, I think that it's a reasonable accommodation given the history of this particular house. So, I would be amiss if I didn't say that.
That's fine. Are there any other comments or questions from commissioners?
I just want to make sure I'm understanding. I mean, the siding that's on this thing, this kind of side lap stuff, is not original, or is the historic?
The outer level of siding that you see there, the kind of the taupe color,
mm-hmm.
That was installed in 2005.
Okay.
But
traditional lap siding would have been... most likely would have been the original
probably well the house originally was probably built with the channel siding.
The original inside the fireplace.
Okay.
So that is drop siding.
Okay.
And then it looks like the at least by the 1940s it had been resided at least once with cedar siding.
Okay.
In a bevel. And which, you know, wouldn't be uncommon if the house was remodeled, like built in the 1890s and remodeled in more of a craftsman style or
yeah.
something like that
yeah.
later on. And so I think that Michael, you can. I'm gonna put words in your mouth, but basically, you got. They're picking that period of time to remodel to.
Sure,
that
sure.
makes sense.
Neighborhood is similar.
Yeah. No, I was just curious. I just kind of missed it. I guess going through there, whether or not that was the original.
It's not actually
or
clear
was.
What's original.
Yeah, and that's
it's a
yeah.
huge hodgepodge of materials.
Yeah, yeah. After walking through it. April, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But your intent at this time is to take all of the exterior siding off that's been laid over the top and redo it with the cementitious siding, 7-inch
exactly.
exposure from top to
yep.
bottom.
8 1/4 inch, I think, is the...
Yeah,
eight, yeah with
the
3/4
seven,
with a 7-inch exposure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, are there any other questions or comments from commissioners? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion. Oh, okay.
I move that the Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the recommendation from the Architectural Review Committee for 1111 North 4th Street.
Is there a second?
Second.
Give you simultaneously. Is there discussion on the motion? With this, we need to acknowledge a future tax evaluation criteria, which will definitely be coming up later. If there is no other discussion, we will proceed to vote.
I can offer clarification. Just
yes, please do.
Tax. Basically, what I want to have the commission be clear on, you know, you're not approving a special tax valuation application at this point or anything like that.
No,
but by approving this, knowing that the intent is that there will be one coming in. Now, this house has gone to the brink and back, really, and so, you know. When this project is being approved by the commission, so later on when they apply for it, I just want to make sure the commission, you know, understands it, doesn't have concerns at that time and says, well, we don't think this meets our design guidelines or something like that, and have problems with that design at that time. And so as long as the commission is cognizant and it was a point of record that it was raised and the commission is okay with that, I mean, it's not a wild exception or anything like that. I just want to make sure it's clear.
I think for this house... since it's been the breaking back, I don't know what else to do, really. I think that it's fully justified, but I'm just curious if there has ever been a special tax valuation application when they've replaced the siding or replaced the windows. Does that ever happen?
I believe it has, yeah.
There's been lots of different examples of buildings that have been in various states of various conditions
but
to start with.
Did you replace the siding?
In the end.
We've had
buildings that have had their exterior cladding completely replaced. We've had extensive replacement of siding on some houses, but we also haven't ever had a case in an enforcement case like 1111 North 4th Street as well. We've never had a house that got to that point in this condition, and so it's sort of, I mean, in a lot of ways it's unprecedented. So if that answers your question.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Hearing no other discussion on the motion, we will proceed to vote. All those in favor of approving the application as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Motion passes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I think we reviewed everything.
Issue a written notice of the decision in the next day or two.
Thank you very much.
With that, we have dispatched our agenda for the evening. I have no comments under chair comments.
I will leave the last few minutes for any comments from staff and any announcements from commissioners.
So I have one question that I should have raised when the parks folks were here, but so shouldn't we like ask that it be put on the register or something like that? As a structure, and I was surprised to find out, I didn't know that Twitchell was the architect, and we have a couple of houses in the North Slope that are Twitchell houses, but I don't think we have many buildings by him that remain intact. And anyway, so I just was.
Go ahead.
I can say that that I believe that is an active discussion within Metro Parks. And between Metro Parks and the city, so it's not gone unnoticed. And actually, there are probably, as I think you or somebody mentioned during the discussion, there are some provisions that being a historic landmark also would assist with this process. And so, the awareness is there. I'm not sure exactly what status they have, and obviously they have their own parks board and things like that. So
I thought the house in the Rose Garden was on. It's not. Isn't that a Russell structure?
It may be. Yeah.
I believe it.
I think the house is a Russell.
So there may be opportunities there will be opportunities, I think, for further discussion on this. Melissa's working actively within Metro Parks on these issues too. So I'll keep you updated.
Okay. So, are there? Other questions or announcements from commissioners? All right, we are adjourned.
I have one thing. ARC meeting August 17th. If we have a request for an ARC meeting on August 17th to for a more informal iterative meeting with Pacific Avenue Streetscape.
Okay.
So.
Where's that?